Welcome to HN Pod, your daily dose of the top stories from Hacker News. I'm Mike.
And I'm Sarah. Today is Thursday, April 9th, and we are covering the top stories from yesterday, April 8th, 2026. This is episode number 360, Mike, almost a full circle.
Almost there. We have a fantastic lineup today. We're looking at some incredibly practical Git commands for auditing code bases, a wild project porting Mac OS X to the Nintendo Wii, a concerning update from the VeraCrypt project, why US cities are ditching flock safety surveillance cameras, and finally, a really clever analog bicycle bell designed to outsmart noise-canceling headphones.
Let's kick things off with a post that blew up yesterday, grabbing over 1,800 points. It is titled, Git Commands I Run Before Reading Any Code, written by Ali Pichowski.
I loved this one. Ali does codebase audits, and she points out that before you even look at a single file of source code, you can use Git history as a diagnostic tool to see exactly where a project hurts. She shared 5 commands that reveal things like churn hotspots, bus factor, and crisis patterns.
Right, like finding the most changed files in the last year. She notes that high churn combined with high bug fixes in the commit messages usually points to the scariest file in the repository. You know, that one file everyone is terrified to touch because every change is just a patch on top of a patch?
We all know that file. She also uses the short log command to check the bus factor. If one person accounts for 60% of the commits and they left 6 months ago, you have a crisis on your hands.
The Hacker News comments really ran with this. Someone actually translated all her Git commands into Jujitsu, or JJ, which is a version control system that has been gaining some serious traction lately.
Oh yeah, the Jujitsu debate was fascinating. The commands in JJ look much more like programming or querying rather than shell scripting. But it sparked this hilarious debate about whether switching to Jujitsu is like switching to a Dvorak keyboard.
Exactly. One commenter called it the Dvorak of Git, saying it might be more efficient, but it is incompatible with what everyone else uses, and it is pushed by a very vocal minority. They compared it to Redditors who insist you absolutely need a mechanical keyboard or 120 frames per second to play video games.
Which is funny because another commenter pointed out that mechanical keyboards used to just be normal keyboards back in the day. But to be fair to Jujitsu, a lot of users chimed in to say it is actually fully compatible with Git repos, and it handles things like rebasing stock diffs way more ergonomically. Still, for most of us, having these vanilla Git commands in our back pocket is just incredibly valuable.
Moving from practical to purely awesome, our next story is a blog post by Brian Keller titled, I Ported Mac OS X to the Nintendo Wii. It hit over 1,300 points.
This is peak Hacker News. Brian managed to get Mac OS X version 10.0 Cheetah running natively on a Nintendo Wii, and the write-up is just a masterclass in low-level engineering and problem-solving.
It really is. He explains that the Wii uses a PowerPC processor, which is actually an evolution of the chip used in the old G3 iBooks and iMacs, so the CPU architecture was compatible. But he had to write his own bootloader from scratch to initialize the Wii hardware, load the XNU kernel from an SD card, and pass control to it.
My favorite part of the technical deep dive was how he handled debugging. Once the kernel took over, the screen went black and his serial debug connection dropped. So to figure out how far the boot process was getting, he binary patched the kernel to toggle the instructions for the Wii's front panel LED. If the light blinked, he knew the code made it to that specific memory offset.
That is so clever. And the comments were flooded with nostalgia. It reminded a lot of people of the 2008 Hackintosh era, where people were buying Dell Mini 9 netbooks for $300 and running Leopard on them.
Yes, and a lot of developers in the thread were praising the architecture of early Mac OS X, specifically the IOKit driver model. It was originally built from OS X, evolving from Next's driver kit. And people were genuinely surprised by how well abstracted it was, even 20 years ago.
But Mike, we have to mention the absolute best detail from the whole thread. Brian posted pictures of his development process, and he was doing this low-level kernel patching on an economy-class airplane seat.
Unbelievable. Someone in the comments pointed out how funny it is to imagine the guy sitting next to him just playing a Nintendo Switch, completely unaware that Brian has an actual Wii plugged in on his tray table, reverse engineering a 25-year-old Apple operating system. Just incredible dedication.
All right, taking a more serious turn, we have a project update from VeraCrypt that sparked a massive discussion with over 1,100 points.
Yeah, this one is concerning. The lead developer of VeraCrypt posted on SourceForge that their Microsoft account, which they use for code signing, was suddenly suspended without any warning or notification. They just woke up, tried to publish an update, and found out they were locked out.
And this isn't an isolated incident. Jason Donenfeld, the creator of WireGuard, actually chimed in the comments saying he is currently facing the exact same problem with his Microsoft account. He pointed out how dangerous this is. Imagine if there was a critical zero-day vulnerability being exploited in the wild, and the developers are literally completely blocked from pushing an emergency patch because an automated system flagged their account.
The discussion quickly pivoted to the broader implications of these massive tech platforms having so much unaccountable power. One user argued that providers like Microsoft, Google, and Apple need to be regulated as utilities. The idea is that they shouldn't be allowed to arbitrarily deny service to an entity in good standing without a human review process.
That sparked a really deep debate about government regulation versus government surveillance, because as another commenter pointed out, the governments themselves might actually be the hostile party here. Strong encryption tools like Veracrypt challenge a government's monopoly on information, so there is a suspicion that these arbitrary bans might sometimes be the result of quiet political pressure.
It gets into this philosophical debate about democracy and encryption. Someone cited a poll saying that while most citizens support encryption, a majority also favor government backdoor access for national security, which leads to the uncomfortable question. If the majority wants backdoors and Veracrypt refuses to build them, is banning it just the platform enforcing the will of the majority?
It is a dark thought, but a classic tyranny of the majority problem. As the thread concluded, the only real defense is having full control over your supply chain, using free and open source operating systems, and building resilient distribution networks where no single corporate entity can just flip a switch and turn you off.
Speaking of surveillance, our next story comes from CNET. U.S. cities are axing Flock safety surveillance technology.
Flock Safety makes these automated license plate reading cameras that have been popping up in neighborhoods and cities everywhere. But now, several cities are canceling their contracts, citing poor safety outcomes, high costs, and privacy concerns.
The comments on this one were really insightful. A lot of people recommended a series of YouTube videos by Ben Jordan, a musician and tech creator who has been doing deep dives into how insecure Flock cameras are and the shady ways they interface with local governments.
What really stood out in the Hacker News discussion was this recurring theme about what actually makes a community safe. One user pointed out that putting up a million cameras and building a fortress doesn't create safety. Safety comes from knowing your neighbors and having a community with context.
Exactly. There was this great analogy to prepper culture. You have people hoarding weapons and gadgets for the apocalypse, but they don't build networks or talk to anyone. If society actually breaks down, those isolated people just become loot drops for groups that actually banded together.
Right. Someone mentioned that the best thing you can do for neighborhood security is to design it for pedestrian friendliness. If people are out walking, kids are playing, and neighbors are loitering and chatting, you have eyes on the street.
Contrast that with some modern suburbs where everyone has a 6-foot block wall. The roads are wide and fast, and you never see the people living next door. A camera that tells you a suspicious car drove by after the fact is way less effective than a neighborhood where people actually look out for each other. As one commenter put it, you don't need AI surveillance, you need rice-powered cameras, which is just regular people paying attention to their surroundings.
That is a perfect transition to our final story, which is a brilliant piece of analog engineering trying to solve a very modern urban problem. It is about the Skoda Dual Bell, a bicycle bell designed to penetrate noise-canceling headphones.
I thought this was so cool. So the problem is that as cycling gets more popular in cities like London, accidents with pedestrians are going up. And a huge factor is that half the pedestrians are walking around with active noise-canceling headphones on. A traditional bike bell just gets completely filtered out by the headphones' algorithms.
So Skoda partnered with audiologists and scientists from the University of Salford to figure out how to beat the algorithm. They discovered a safety gap in the frequency band between 750 and 780 hertz that can actually slip past the active noise cancellation filters.
But it is not just the pitch. The Duo Bell uses a specially designed hammer mechanism that produces rapid and irregular strikes, along with a secondary resonator. It creates sound waves that are so chaotic and fast that the artificial intelligence in the headphones simply cannot process and suppress them in time.
It is such a clever analog hack for a digital problem. In their real-world trials with delivery couriers in London, pedestrians wearing noise-canceling headphones had up to 22 meters of extra reaction distance when they heard the Dual Bell compared to a normal bell.
It really embodies that classic hacker ethos. You have billions of dollars poured into AI and audio processing to block out the world, and some engineers defeat it with a carefully tuned piece of metal and an irregular hammer. It just goes to show that sometimes the best solutions don't need a battery or a software update.
That is so true. And that wraps up our stories for today. Thank you so much for joining us on episode 360 of HN Pod.
We hope you enjoyed the deep dives into yesterday's top hacker news discussions. Whether you are patching kernels on an airplane or just trying to navigate your local code base, we appreciate you spending part of your day with us.
Have a great Thursday, and we will be back tomorrow with more of the best tech news and community insights. See you then.